You are on the line, live on ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com, and the Radio Alabama app. To be on the line, call 334-321-1390 or text 334-784-1067. Bringing you the insight and passion surrounding Auburn athletics, the SEC, and more. This is what sports talk radio should be. Lock it in right here on Auburn Opelika's sports leader, ESPN 106.7. Now, live from Auburn, Alabama, with the guys who tell it like it is and hold nothing back. You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika sports leader. Happy Monday, everybody. Hope you're doing well on this September 15th, 2025. This is On the Line, the show that tells you like it is and holds nothing back. I'm your man, Jacob Goins. Across from me is Christian Griffin. We appreciate you being with us on this sunny, beautiful Victory Monday afternoon. Once again, the Tigers of Auburn are 3-0 to start the season. Not everybody in college football can say that. Not everybody in the SEC can say that. And funny enough, Auburn's the only team in the state of Alabama that can say that. So take your wins where you can get them, Tiger fans, because now the season truly begins. We're talking so much college football on today's show, talking Auburn, South Alabama, talking the SEC and around the country as well. Christian, happy Monday, sir. How are you?
Doing well, man. Happy Monday. Happy Victory Monday, as you mentioned, the third straight. And what a season it's been so far. We've talked about what's ahead of us, but we're going to sit here and rejoice one more day on the 3-0 start. We're talking about the Auburn offense and kind of generic game recaps here to start the show. We're going to move into a little bit of a defensive conversation at 2:15 before we dive into the masterclass that Week 3 brought us in the college football slate. Talk about our predictions. Talk about some of the best games of the weekend from 2:30 to 3. And then at 3 o'clock, our favorite news segment at 3 o'clock on Monday afternoons, and that's talking about the AP poll that everybody just seems to absolutely love. And thankfully, this year it's getting a whole lot of backlash. Nobody seems to be in any sort of agreement. There's so many people talking about it on social media of these people need to come out and be able to defend every single vote that they make, because it truly feels like every week you're just defending what you didn't do the previous week. And so we're diving into that conversation to start hour number two before we dive into a little bit of our high school coverage, talking Lee Scott Academy and Auburn High School, what happened on Friday night. Says another 2-0 weekend in Auburn with Auburn High School and Lee Scott Academy, which is what you go for every single week before we get to Jacob Hillman of the Auburn Sports Network at 3:30.
Yep, there's a lot to get to, so let's dive into it. Phone lines are open. If you want to be a part of the show on this Monday afternoon, give us a call. You could do so right now, 334-321-1390. Let us know how you are feeling on this Monday afternoon. Auburn's 3-0, and they defeat South Alabama 31-15. Call in, give us your immediate thoughts right now, 334-321-1390, or you can always shoot us a text in the On the Line text box at 334-784-1067. Auburn takes down South Alabama on Saturday 31-15, and Christian, just your initial thoughts on the Tigers and the Jags.
It's exactly, you don't want to say it quite like this, but it's exactly what we expected this weekend to be. It's exactly how both of us talked exactly about the game. We predicted it to not necessarily be pretty. It was going to be a little bit ugly. It was going to be one of those games where Hugh Freeze mentioned it in the opening statements of the press conference of, we're going to get in, we're going to get out, and our main concern was keeping guys healthy. You saw that with time of possession, both offensively, and I'll even say it, defensively, which is something that you don't usually see with teams on defense trying to eat up the offense's time of possession. But I truly think that that was what Auburn and DJ Durkin tried to do. More on that here in just a little bit. But You hate to say it exactly like it, but I mean, I feel like other than maybe a touchdown more for Auburn, the game went exactly like we thought it would.
Yeah, Hugh Freeze had thoughts that he just wrapped up his press conference with. We'll talk about some of those as well, continue to give our thoughts. But we head to the phone lines to get the Monday edition of On the Line started. 334-321-1390. John in Auburn, you're on the line, my friend. Happy Monday.
Hey, happy Monday. Had a quick question for y'all. What happened to the narrative that Hugh Freeze quarterbacks, no matter what the system, would be turnover prone? Because I haven't seen that a quarter of the way through the 2025 season.
Haven't seen Auburn turn it over at all, John. I mean, Auburn is taking care of the football in all three facets, whether it's the quarterback, running backs, or receivers. They're just simply taking care of the football, which is nice to see.
And that's one thing looking ahead to this week. Matera has been turnover prone through three games. I think the SEC is turning into more of an NFL-style game where if you're plus one, plus two, or minus one, minus two, makes a huge difference in the scorebook at the end of the day. Thank you, guys.
Thanks so much, John. Makes a great point.
It makes a big difference. And, yeah, John, thanks for the call. It makes a very, very big difference because of the running clock style of football, right? We talked about it. Auburn had two drives in the second half. Two drives. That should not feel like it's possible. Yet the way that the running clock works, and this, again, the conversation of I think Auburn's defense allowed South Alabama to eat up as much time as possible just simply because of how this game was just playing out and how I think Auburn strategically wanted it to play out. Those drives are so critical, so crucial, much less you get four or five first downs. Auburn was having 14, 15 play touchdown drives in the first half. That was eating up 7, 8, 9 minutes. In old school college football, I say old school as in like 4 years ago, Those 12, 13, 14 play drives are 4.5 minutes or 5 minutes or 6 minutes because first downs, the clock stops for 10 seconds while they reset the chains, or it stops the entire time when somebody runs or gets tackled out of bounds. Now you don't see that. So you see every single time you run the ball, you pick up a first down, you get tackled out of bounds, you see that official wave his arm and the 40 clock starts right there, and you have 40 seconds to run a play. I think Auburn has done a really nice job, and funny on the turnover side of things. I saw a stat, I think Hokanson tweeted it out today, that said Auburn through three games is plus two on the turnover margins through three games this year. This point last year, minus seven.
It's a big difference. That's a huge difference, and that's something we'll talk about as the week goes along, about how Auburn can beat Oklahoma is forcing some of those turnovers and then scoring when you do.
Yeah.
But, yeah, the fact that through three games, I mean, Auburn just simply has not turned the football over. You've put it on the ground a couple of times, but you've gotten it back. And, look, Jackson Arnold hasn't put the ball in danger. He has not done what previous Auburn quarterbacks have done. And going back to the Auburn-South Alabama game, again, give us a call. We want to hear your thoughts, 334-784-1067. Auburn had seven offensive drives on Saturday. You scored on your first five, and one drive was just you didn't score. The final drive, the seventh drive, was you kneeling it out and winning the football game.
I think that was technically the eighth, but seven true.
Okay, so seven true drives, yes. And you scored on five of those,
yes,
right?
You scored 71% of the time you touched the ball on offense.
I mean, I understand that, like you said, you probably would want to see a few more points than 31. I get it, but can we all agree that we were right and a lot of other people were right as well about that South Alabama team? They're talented.
They're going to compete in the Sun Belt, man.
That's a good team. That's a good South Alabama team. That is the perfect example of how the bottom floor of college football has been brought up thanks to NIL and the transfer portal. That's a perfect example of what you saw on Saturday with South Alabama. That's a team out of the Sun Belt that is going to beat some people. Again, they gave Tulane everything they wanted 2 weeks ago, a Tulane team that's on the path to make the college football playoff. That's a South Alabama team that came into Jordan-Hare and competed with Auburn. They did. But Auburn didn't give it everything they had, and they didn't have to. They didn't need to. They did exactly what we said was going to happen. This game played out the exact way we said it would. Auburn would come in, do what it had to do, stay vanilla, stay healthy, and get home. That's it. That's what they did.
And avoid a trap game. which a team like South Alabama, now that you've seen the success that they have on the offensive side of the football field, goes to show exactly why we were worried, at least from that standpoint of, I don't care necessarily how the game looks. Avoid the Troy-Clemson game, which maybe that's funny enough. Maybe it doesn't look as good for Troy. No, I think it still does. But with Clemson not looking all that good. But, I mean, time of possession, South Alabama had the ball for 31.5, Auburn for 28.5. And, I mean, again, you hate to come on here and say, yeah, well, I'm not surprised by any sort of outcome. Again, I think the one thing we could have predicted is Auburn 7 more points. 38-15, we would have walked in here and been like, yeah, nobody's surprised about anything at all. Yes, South Alabama had 310 yards, and talking defensively more in just a little bit, but again, 15 points and DJ Durkin's defense, you bend, you don't break, and Auburn was very willing to let them chew up 37 seconds of the clock every single down.
Auburn has one turnover on the year offensively. Someone just texted in the text box, 784-1067. I forgot about the Ryan Gee fumble against Ball State that he lost. That's it. You have one turnover from a guy that, I hate to say this, it's a guy that's not going to play in SEC play. Like, it's just somebody that you're not going to see on the field that often. So I had forgotten about that. But that's Auburn's only true turnover this year.
Yeah, turnover lost.
Yeah. And that's impressive. I don't care who the opponent is. Not turning the football over was such an issue last year. And it's funny that we're having this conversation going into the Oklahoma game, because a turnover is what lost you this game last year. So if Auburn's able to keep the football in their possession, not give it away to OU, and maybe force a couple of turnovers as well, you've got a really good chance to walk out of Norman with a win this weekend. We'll get to that as we go. Someone else texted in the text box as well. Again, 334-784-1067. You can get your thoughts in there by shooting us a text or give us a call at 334-321-1390. Talking about Oklahoma's Mason Thomas being out for the first half, yeah, against Auburn this weekend because of the targeting penalty against Temple. We will go over that. And then says that Ott is basically non-existent for them so far, which is absolutely true. And I'm going to be really honest, I don't know why. I haven't seen any reports or news or anything about Jaden Ott in terms of his energy or his health or his effort or any of that. He simply just has not been the guy that they've relied on so far this year, which is wild to think about.
It is, yeah. I know he's been dealing with he had the ankle stuff at Cal, which was what kept him from being 100% when coming into Jordan-Hare. I know he was 100% when Auburn went to Cal, but was limited coming to Jordan-Hare, which with Mendoza didn't obviously necessarily matter. But he's been dealing with shoulder stuff that kind of bothered him all during fall camp. And I think he had one carry against Illinois State. Was that their opener?
Yeah.
Or was that week two?
Like that.
But whatever it was, had like one carry for -1 yard or something along those rules, or something along those lines. And Venables said that you would expect to see a lot of them against Michigan, and that didn't pan out to be the case. And that's kind of the one halt that a bunch of people have on Oklahoma right now, is they haven't had too much success running the football with running backs. Notice that's something that you haven't seen this year, as, again, with running backs, you haven't seen too much success. Obviously, John Mateer brings so much to that offense with his ability to run the football. But, yeah, it's going to be really interesting to see if Ott does get more carries now that SEC play is going, and it's simply a, we're going to wait till you're 1,000% clear and good to go, or if it's going to be kind of that running back by committee where you've seen those number two and number three guys step up for OU.
Freeze had a comment today. Again, he just wrapped up his presser about 30 minutes ago. He was asked about the offensive line, which you and I talked about watching this game, looked really, really good compared to what they did against Ball State, which, yeah, is fascinating when you think about it, because the difference in talent of Ball State versus South Alabama, not to be a hater, but it's just there was a significant difference.
Oh, yeah.
Auburn's offensive line was terrible against Ball State. Terrible. I mean, they let Jackson Arnold get hit several times. He got dropped several times in that game against Ball State, I believe four to be exact. That didn't happen this weekend against South Alabama. They played really, really well. Free said, quote, I thought we strained better. We worked hard on that last week, making the play go longer than normal and straining for that extra second. We certainly will have to strain to protect the quarterback against Oklahoma's defense this weekend.
I love it. Rather than sitting there and thinking, all right, you got to hold the block for 3 seconds. You got to hold the block for four.
Yeah, hold
just
it.
Go there. Not hold, but hold the block and make sure that you keep him in front of you, because if you get to the point where you're comfortable with three, then all of a sudden it's going to turn into 2.5 mentally, and that's where Jackson Arnold doesn't have that mental clock. I think another big thing from Ball State to South Alabama is the fact that you allowed Jackson a little bit more mobility against South Alabama. He was a little quicker to take off a couple times during the scrambles, which obviously helps out your offensive line. But, man, it was the run blocking that was really, really impressive to watch against South Alabama. There's clips going around of Jeremiah Wright just absolutely bulldozing the nose guard and then coming out and blocking the right outside linebacker and giving Jeremiah Cobb 20, 25 yards to look at, or making it to where you're one-on-one with a safety. I mean, you do that two or three times a game, you trust one of those runs to break off and go the distance, if not break for 30 or 40 yards. Run blocking, you feel like, hasn't necessarily been an issue. Pass blocking against Ball State was. That being said, I think the mobility of Jackson Arnold being freed up to do that a little bit more against South Alabama continues to help them as well.
Let's get to the phone lines again before we get to break. 334-321-1390. Specter, you're on the line. Happy Monday.
Hello, guys. Well, I'm not as optimistic as I should be. This is the game I've been waiting for. And tell you the truth, you just mentioned a bit about the offensive line. This has actually been a roller coaster ride over the last two games. The way that the performance they did against Ball State, and then a good performance against South Alabama. That all being said, you know, in 23, we were 3-0, and we lost the next four.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's something to keep in the back of your mind.
Yeah, the second 3-0 start under Hugh Freeze here at Auburn so far.
Yep, and of course we're facing the number 11 team.
Top 15 team. Yes, they are considered. Yeah. Yep, number 11 in the AP.
I believe
poll.
We have number 11, number 12, number 5, and then number 15, all in a row.
Yeah, that concerns me. So we've got to have performance out of everybody. Special teams, defensive backs, everybody. Receivers shouldn't be dropping balls at this point in their career. I'm going to talk a little bit more about that as the week goes on. But I just want to let you guys know that 23 is right there in the back of my mind.
Okay. Yep, I understand, Specter. We appreciate the call. And he's right. He is absolutely right. Auburn has been here before under Hugh Freeze being 3-0. But Auburn has a nice win under its belt already. I think that to me is the difference here, Christian. I think that's the difference for me, is the fact that you've gone on the road. You beat a good football team in Baylor. While the atmosphere was raucous, yes, it was not, and it's not going to be what you're going to see this weekend. It's not. That 2023 team beat UMass, Cal, and Samford.
And if Cal is the game that A is not even comparable to Baylor whatsoever that year, and B, if that's the Power Four team, I mean, you look at that win, you could ask 100 Auburn fans outside of the Walmart, wherever, whichever one you choose to shop at, and I bet you all 100 would say that they had zero confidence after that game. It was, okay, there's a win, get out of Berkeley.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, at 2 o'clock in the morning, it was, man, just find a way to win and let's go home. This is a disaster. You went to Waco and it's, hey, let's go get a win.
Yes.
Let's go win this game.
And afterwards, after a 2-touchdown win, you go ask those same 100 people, how do you feel about this one? I bet you there's a lot more of them that feel a little bit better and have more confidence going into the season just based off of the way that that game played out.
But there's still a lot of football to be played and a lot to prove for Auburn, and it starts this weekend against Oklahoma. Specter brings up a good point about the OU defense. I want to talk about their defense plus Auburn's defense as well, because there seems to be some concern from Tiger fans about what the defensive effort and execution looked like this past Saturday. We talk about that coming up next here on the Monday edition of On the Line. Stick around.
You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin. If you want to be on the line, call 334-321-1390 or text 334-784-1067.
All right, we continue on here on the Monday edition of On the Line here on ESPN 106.7. If you have thoughts on Auburn in South Alabama, Auburn in general, Auburn, Oklahoma, or anything else going on around college football, give us a call right now, 334-321-1390. We're getting to our Week 3 recap and reactions coming up in just a little bit, but I want to talk defense for a second.
Yeah, the Falcons looked great last night.
I mean, you could say the same about their opponent if you really wanted to defensively.
I saw something that said that the Falcons rank like 60% in some sort of statistical category on defensive success, which would have been like the highest in a decade, which is wild to think about.
And then there was the Giants-Cowboys game, which was the complete opposite That's one of the craziest games I've ever seen. But talking about good defense, right, Auburn this weekend against South Alabama. After the game, we've seen a lot of stress, worry, concern from Auburn fans about how Auburn played defensively against South Alabama. And Hugh Freeze was asked about it today, asked about the big plays that have been given up and the chunk plays and things, and he basically said it's because of misalignment issues and missed assignments. He said missed assignments are still hurting us, and that's something we're going to have to focus on this weekend, because there clearly were over the weekend. But I do want to remind folks, and this goes for the entire team for Auburn overall, you played that game without several starters, several key players on both sides of the football. You also may have lost one for a while in Amaris Williams, who Freeze gave an update on today that he may not be good to go this weekend. But I'm genuinely trying to figure out why people are stressed about the defense. I know there were some big plays, and there were some misreads and some breakdowns, but you gave up 15 points. South Alabama didn't do anything, and Auburn wasn't trying to do anything on defense. Auburn played South Alabama the way defenses have played Auburn. They played off, they played soft, and they were like, look, you want to run between the 30s or 40s? Have at it. Have fun this afternoon, South Alabama.
Yeah.
But when they needed to, they buckled down and got stops. Does that sound familiar? Sounds like DJ Durkin to me. Sounds like the greatest defensive coordinator in the SEC, top three defensive coordinator in college football to me. I'm not worried about it. I think you may have a little bit more concerns, Christian, than I do. But I could be wrong, but I'm not worried about it. I'm really not. And especially against a game against South Alabama where you gave up 15 total points. Like, I'm not worried about it.
There's things that I could be worried about from whistle to whistle, yes. But from horn to horn, meaning start of the first quarter, end of the fourth quarter, I don't think those are anything that should be overbearing or forcing me to lose sleep at night. I'm going to say a statement here. I'm going to say a saying and a comparison that nobody has ever said before in the existence of the world. And Jacob, you're going to like this one, but very similar to what you said about a quarterback in the SEC. You can compare Auburn's defense to Diego Pavia. Until they give you a reason not to believe in them, Why would you stop? Why would you stress?
That boy Pavia is cold, ain't he? He's cold now.
Why would you stress out about it?
I haven't
given you a reason though. But again, it's gone and it's proven you. We talked about it last year of how the defense, when you played more freshmen than anybody else in the country on the defensive side of the football field, kept you in every single game. The defense was not a reason once why you lost a football game. You now have more talent on the defensive side of the football field this year. And yes, there were a couple more question marks going into it, but I feel like those have been answered relatively well. Yeah, you mentioned it. The fact that Auburn played defense the way, and specifically what I have in my notes, is that Auburn defense played against South Alabama the way that Baylor's defense played against Auburn.
But for different reasons.
For different reasons, but still same, but different, if you will. From the standpoint of, yeah, we know that you can, we know you can run the football. We trust you to get 3 or 4 yards a carry. Go ahead. We trust our DBs to play back enough, and we're going to give up 5 yards a pop. But we're going to make you eat 9 minutes on a drive, and if you end up with 7, if you end up with 3, it doesn't necessarily matter. Oh, yeah, and Auburn also got a couple turnovers in the red zone as well. You feel like those things begin to give you a little bit more confidence, and one of those guys, his name is Jared Smith, and he's going to be seeing the ball a lot more, seeing the field a lot more, yes, because of talent, but B, because of an injury with Amaris Williams that you mentioned where Jared Smith is that next man up. But you've seen plenty of guys talk about how he needs to be on the field even more. Auburn scored, again, on 5 of their 7 possessions, and you forced South Alabama to march down the field and put 15 play drives together just to get into the red zone. If Hugh Freeze's main mentality and main focus in this game was making sure that a majority of guys stayed healthy, or if you weren't 100% healthy, you didn't really see the field. There were multiple guys on the defensive side of the football field that didn't, offensively as well. I feel like that is a very big check mark. And most importantly to me, what we talked about, you avoided that so-called trap game. Because South Alabama is a dang good team. They're going to compete in the Sun Belts, and you held them to 15 points. It's the same thing with Baylor. It's the exact same argument that people had, or the exact same stresses of, oh, man, whew, Sawyer Robertson, there's a 4 right there in that passing category. Okay, yeah, there's 24 points on the scoreboard.
Exactly. And one thing that Freeze said today that is interesting that we'll keep monitoring as the week goes on. He was asked about the secondary and some of those broken plays and said some of it's technique that we need to coach better. Some of it's communication with the young kids. He also talked about the young guys kind of being hard on themselves, not being perfect and being upset by not being perfect. And he said he had to remind him of that today, that, hey, it's all right. You're not going to make every play, but you got to get up and make the next play. He tells me the young guys are hungry, man. They're ready to eat and they want to get better. And I believe that they will get better.
Well, it's talked about last year, right, of those younger freshmen that were coming in and talking all about how the upperclassmen weren't having the right mindsets. You now have sophomores and freshmen now, much less the transfers that you brought in, all bringing that dog mentality on the defensive side of the football field. You absolutely love it.
Auburn's 3-0 at the end of the day. Not everybody can say that. We talk about those teams and more coming up next.
You're 30 minutes into On the Line on ESPN 106.7. Now back to the studio with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin.
30 minutes into hour number one here on the Monday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. He is Christian Griffin. I'm Jacob Goins. We appreciate you being with us as we are flipping gears for now. We'll talk more Auburn, South Alabama, kind of just general thoughts on the Tigers. As we go throughout today's show, we are going to talk a little AP poll coming up in just a little bit, plus Jacob Hillman of the Auburn Sports Network is going to join us in hour number two as well. Phone lines continue to be open if you'd like to be a part of the show. Come on in. We'd love to hear from you. 334-321-1390 if you want to call in and talk about Auburn or college football or whatever you'd like to discuss. We are here for you. 334-321-1390. Or you could shoot us a text in the on-the-line text box at 334-784-1067. And we zoom out, Mr. Griffin. We zoom out to look at what happened around the SEC and around college football, because week 3 was simply awesome.
Yeah.
There was so much drama this past weekend on a slate that on paper we were like, it could be good. There's some pretty good games out there, but my goodness, let's start in the SEC before we branch out further. Biggest result in the conference this past weekend was what?
I mean, I feel like the obvious answer that you have to bring up is Georgia and Tennessee, which is was known as the game of the week. It had every sort of expectation that you could possibly have asked for. It had so much more than what you thought could have happened. I believe both of us predicted this game in Knoxville to be relatively lower scoring, and at halftime,
wild,
just about was the total game spread in this game. I know we're getting to the phone lines, but I feel like that is the game, is before we dive into it, that's the game that stands out in the SEC.
Oh, Tennessee, man. It happened how it always happens with Tennessee.
Which was the only reason I picked Georgia.
Which is why I should have picked Georgia. And deep down in my heart, or maybe in my brain, I was like, yeah, you should probably go with Kirby Smart. You should probably pick Georgia because it's Kirby Smart and it's Georgia. Same reason we've talked about Saban. You made that comparison on Friday. Until they give you a reason, don't bet against them, right? Well, it happened again. And Tennessee, again, punches Georgia in the mouth to start the game. And we were like, oh. It's like, oh, my God. It looked different. It felt different. Aguilar right down the field. Boom, 7-0. Boom, did it again. 21-7 before you can look. It's like, holy smokes. Tennessee's actually going to do it. And then they didn't. And Georgia. And Kirby Smart, you said this on Saturday, going to overtime or late in the fourth quarter, you said, this is where Kirby Smart makes that paycheck.
Oh, yeah.
This is where he makes his money.
It was one of the ones where when there were 3 minutes left, it was like if Tennessee doesn't get to field goal range, which they did, but it was if he misses this, it goes to overtime, throw everything on Georgia because Tennessee did not have a run game. Georgia did. And it's when guys like Kirby Smart, make their money.
334-321-1390. Andy, you're on the line, my friend. How'd those picks end up for you this weekend?
So, first off, I have no affiliation with Robinhood, so I'm sorry I can't get them to sponsor you. I wish I could.
Just find a connection in there and get them to spend a little money.
Trust me, I'm trying. But, no, that's just how I make my living now off the stock market and here lately with really good football records, just treating it like stocks, taking emotions out of it, taking everything out of it where it just doesn't make sense, just like everything else. So the less it makes sense, the easier it is to choose. And I went with Tennessee, Florida, South Carolina, and I'm losing one, another underdog. Texas A&M.
Oh, so you went 1-for-3.
No, really? Did Vanderbilt not win?
I thought you said you took South Carolina.
No, Vanderbilt.
Oh, my bad. I thought you said South Carolina. I'm sorry.
That game, maybe. I'm not speaking right. I'm already thinking a minute from what I'm about to say. But I guess 50, if you do the spread, the Texas covered. Tennessee. Tennessee covered the 4, but as soon as that lineman jumped on that field goal, I've played enough sports in real life and NCAA on the Xbox that I knew that was game over, man. I mean, did y'all have that feeling where they had the game won, they did everything right, they didn't waste too much time, they didn't leave too much time, and when that lineman jumped, it's just like...
Yeah, it's one of those where you felt it coming, right? You felt that you felt something was about to turn.
We're at the tailgate, and just we're all saying it. And there still had to be some stuff to happen for Georgia to win. And sure enough, it's crazy how many games come down to stuff like that. And whether it's the coaching, the run game, it's amazing how many games come down the line to just one player making one mistake at that. And a lot of things add up to that, I know. But bottom line, that's what you see and that's what you get. But great game. But I'll call y'all Friday with and see if I can do a little bit better than 50.
Okay, Andy, we appreciate it. And look, he's absolutely right about so many of these games, and you start talking about the betting lines and Vegas and stuff getting involved. I mean, we talk about it. It's scary how good they are at what they do out
even
there.
Even when things don't go the way that they imagine or they predicted it to go.
Right, and for every game like Georgia-Tennessee that just smashes the over, right, 44-41, just total shootout in overtime, there's another game where Georgia Tech-Clemson, right, something like that where they just hit it perfectly or whatever. Like, there's always something to get them back to being really good at what they do. And so...
Well, you want to know what it was. It was the fact that Georgia was a 3.5-point favorite.
Yeah.
And they won by 3.
Yeah.
So that's what we're talking about, where it's like even if things don't go the way that they predicted and one of them might go completely haywire, the other one's still right there.
Look at Oregon Northwestern. Oregon was a 21.5-point favorite. They win by 20. I mean, they have it that close. And it took an 85-yard touchdown run at the end of the game for Northwestern for them to backdoor cover.
While they were trying to run out the clock. Same with Penn State and Villanova.
Yeah, dude, Villanova had scored on the last play,
the last
of, the
play
game.
Of the game to cover with with one of the best catches you'll ever see in college football.
Oh, it was nasty. Yeah.
But, again, everything, so many things, rather, come down to to one play, but it makes everything so scary. But we know we're going to dive into Georgia and Tennessee here in a little bit, unless that's what you want to just start with, since that was the game we're already.
I'll give my thoughts again. I mean, Tennessee'd. They just, you had it. This was your chance. This was it. This was the moment for you to break the streak, for you to do it, to pull it off. And, I mean, you feel for them. You absolutely feel for them, because I even said after the game, I said, man, I don't know if I'm, not me personally, it was like, I don't know if you should feel good for Georgia and proud of Georgia for coming back and winning this game, or do you just feel so darn bad for Tennessee for the way they lost this football game again?
Yeah, I mean, it gets to the point of, well, it's 9 in a row now, because it was 8, now it's 9. You get to the point where you feel like it's impossible to beat a certain team, which obviously is not the case, but in a game like this where you feel like everything was going the way that you would imagine, better than you could have imagined, with Joey Aguilar coming out, putting up 21 points on Georgia basically before they could even get their bearings. And yes, Georgia responded in the middle, and I'm going to talk about that in just a minute, but man, you knew that it was going to happen. It was you're up 21-7, Georgia punts, Tennessee gets the football, and it's like, weirdly enough, this could be the biggest drive of the game. Tennessee gets a couple first downs and has to punt, and it's like, well, there it was. There was the stop.
Yeah.
There was the stop that Georgia needed. They go down and score with that Zach Branch screen pass, and now all of a sudden you're like, all right, there's Georgia right back into the game. And there's one play in specific, and weirdly enough, it's not the 4th and 8, which was one of the prettiest balls of the weekend, of the year, that you will see from Gunnar Stockton to the front pylon to Landon Humphreys with the game essentially on the line. But rather than that, going about 3 hours before that, the very first play of the game for the Georgia Bulldogs, right after Joey Aguilar in Tennessee goes 7 plays, 75 yards in like 4 minutes and 18 seconds. Georgia gets the football and a 40-yard completion from Gunnar Stockton. After all of the conversations where, I don't know if Gunnar can compete in this game. I don't know if he really has the ability to play in Neyland. This is his first true big-time road test. He's going to be a little bit jittery. Kirby's going to just hand the ball off. Mike Bobo's going to be fired up. All the people are going to be fired up with Mike Bobo on the message boards because all he does is run screens. Instead, they take a shot. And that kind of silenced the crowd for just a moment, and you feel like it was that completion right there. Wildly enough, starting 1-for-1, but throwing a beautiful ball down the far sideline and making the grab for 40 yards. Georgia goes and punches Tennessee right back in the mouth to make it 7-7. A drive like that, we talked about it, where, all right, both teams perfected their weekly 7-8 play game drive to start. Now it's time to go play real big boy football, but it was that drive right there, because if that's an incomplete pass, it throws so much off of that drive. I feel like that settled down Kirby Smart, that settled down the defense. Kirby never once looked panicked in this game. The DB with a pass interference, he'd go ask the referee, hey, why did you call that? Cool. Hey, come here, Ellis. Come here, KJ, and explained it, smacked him on the butt, said, get back out there. And what happens? KJ Bolden has a pick a couple plays later.
Yeah, so a big win for Georgia, heartbreaking for Tennessee, who I still think is a really good football team. I do. But Georgia,
I'll say it, there's no way that in the AP poll you watch Tennessee play right there, they're the 15th ranked team in the country.
And that they go down.
Right.
That they go down in the AP poll. I know that's what typically happens after a loss, but that's not how that's supposed to work this past weekend. Did you mention our records on air when I was on the phone? Did you mention how we went? Did we both go 6-4 this past week?
You went 7-3.
Did I miscalculate? I thought I went 6-4.
Maybe you did.
I thought I went 6-4.
I'll happily say you did.
I had
I'm
it on
pretty
here.
Positive that, okay, then
I think I went 6-4.
Okay.
Because there were several games that you and I picked together that we both lost.
Yes, there were a couple that we picked, and I know that I was 2 games ahead of you going into the night slate. And then Duke and South Carolina both lost. Because I remember sitting there.
Tulane and Vandy,
baby. We were making our way to dinner. And after watching it, I was like, oh, man, we're feeling pretty good right now. And then A&M won. But I watched that like, okay, I'm fine. We both picked A&M. Even if they win or lose, I'm not losing a game. And then I think we realize that Duke is still kind of a step or two
away. Yeah, which is really unfortunate because I was confident in them to start the season that they were going to make a run
in the ACC.
I
thought there was going to be that restart game after all of the turnovers against Illinois, that it was going to be, okay, you now get to go on the road and kind of hopefully settle the nerves a little bit, but Tulane and Jake Retzlaff punched them in the mouth. They tried to respond in the third and fourth quarter, but just too late, and I don't even know if I want to talk about my man Lenora Sellers because it wasn't even his game. Because
Diego Pop,
it was 14-7, I believe, when Lenora Sellers got taken out. But even at that point, you could feel the momentum changing just a little bit. And when Lenora Sellers went out, the stadium, Williams-Brice Stadium, which I've talked about plenty of times, talked about it ad nauseum on Friday about how if people have not been, they should go because it's an incredible atmosphere. I've been multiple times. With a couple buddies that graduated from South Carolina. But as soon as Lenora Sellers went out, you could see it on everybody's face. You could see it on Beamer's face. He didn't want to show it because you obviously want to have confidence in the next man up. But what did those first two games for South Carolina show you confidence-wise in anybody but Lenora Sellers or maybe that defensive front four?
But here's the thing. Lenora Sellers could play all four quarters of that game, and I think they still lose. Vanderbilt had that game in control when he went out. No, it wasn't a blowout on the scoreboard yet, but Vanderbilt was owning that football game. And I think they win if Lenora Sellers plays the whole thing out. I think they win if they play this game again today. I think Vanderbilt wins that football game because Vanderbilt is legit. And I tried to tell people, and I did not have them winning 31-7. No way I'm going to try and claim that. But I did pick them to win, and I picked them to win because I believed it. And folks, the world's not ready for Vanderbilt to be 5-0 when they walk into Tuscaloosa. They play Georgia State and Utah State the next 2 weeks. Two games that they have to be ready for and aren't against horrible teams, but they're going to be 5-0 when they walk into Tuscaloosa, which I know Alabama looked good this weekend, and that I think says more about Wisconsin than it does Alabama, but sure. Vanderbilt's a good team, man, and they went in and earned that win, and I'm impressed that they did it the way that they did. We'll take a break and keep talking these games when we come back. We'll wrap up hour number one talking more results from week three of college football. You can be a part of it as well. 334-321-1390 is the call-in number, or shoot us a text in the on-the-line text box, 334-784-1067. We wrap up hour number one after this.
You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin, online at ESPNAU.com and on the Radio Alabama app.
Wrapping up hour number one here on ESPN 106.7. Still talking college football. Biggest results from week three of the season. And, I mean, there's so many games we could go through. Miami looked really good. Oregon looked good, even though they, again, let Northwestern backdoor cover. There may be an arch problem in Austin. There may be an issue because that boy looks lost.
On the line, told you.
27-10. We called it. Total bust. Plenty of time for him to get it turned around. We're not saying that he's a true total bust, but like,
the thing is if he was a normal four-star quarterback, again, a normal four-star quarterback, it would be, okay, he's having the freshman struggles. But because of his name, and it's unfortunate for him, he will never live up to the expectations that are already given to him, the comparison of Bronny James, how the media has tracked everything he's done since he could walk. And it's like, oh, look, he only averaged 6 points at Southern Cal. Now in the G League, he's going off. Oh, look, he look at this three that he airballed when in his debut for the Lakers. He will never live up to that just simply because of the name that comes along with any sort of athletic performance. And you obviously hope that that's not always the case, but for two names like that and putting it on there to where he's the favorite to win the Heisman Trophy walking into this season when he had completed what felt like 8 passes in his career, Texas was the easy favorite to win the SEC. They were right there to win the national championship. How could you not feel any of that pressure? And now you throw 10 straight incompletions in your own stadium and you're getting booed off the sidelines?
Yeah. They've got one game to figure it out. They play Sam Houston this weekend before they go to the Swamp next week. And so they've got to figure it out with Arch Manning there in Texas. Kind of rapid fire here. We mentioned it earlier. Heck of a win for Texas A&M and Mike Elko.
Yeah.
I mean, that is such a gutsy win. A win that you can say Notre Dame threw it away. I don't know. But A&M walks out of there victorious. And 41-40 on the road at Notre Dame at night, Texas A&M is a dang good football team. And Auburn better be worried about it when they go there next week. I know Oklahoma's this week and you worry about A&M next week, but that is a heck of a win for Texas A&M.
I was called crazy when Marcel Reed was my fifth-ranked quarterback in the SEC. And not you necessarily, but there were a couple. Ain't no way. No way whatsoever.
I mean, 17 of 37 ain't the greatest stat line in the whole world.
I don't know.
He did have 362 tutties, though. But 17 of 37, that completion percentage, that's all right. He got it done, though.
I'll take a 41-40 win. Hey, it's like
we both called this win, though.
Who was
it?
The defensive lineman for the Chiefs yesterday that was dogging Jalen Hurts. He said, "You ain't even throw for 100 yards." And Jalen said, "Shut your you-know-what up. Yep. We just won the game."
Yeah, we just won the game, dummy. We both called it, though. We both picked Texas A&M to go and win this game. And now Notre Dame.
And look at that, baby.
Yep, look at that. Notre Dame, 0-2, but still ranked in the college or in the AP poll. So that's exciting.
Quality losses, Jacob.
Yeah.
Quality.
Here's the problem. They have no ranked games on their schedule the rest of the way. They have no ranked teams. But guess what? I will still plant my flag. If Notre Dame wins out, they'll be in the playoff.
It's okay. I said that Notre Dame would go 9-3 and they'd miss it. There's a quarterback named Talen Green that's going to host Notre Dame and Marcus Freeman here in a couple weeks. And they might not be able to stop anybody, but
that's
might be a game to the 50s.
Notre Dame just put up 40 points on A&M. They're going to put up 80 on Arkansas. Are you kidding me? Because
Talen Green's going to run for 380 in that
God,
game.
God, Arkansas, I put you in the same category as Tennessee, man. They had every chance, man. Come on, Arkansas. That was my pick. I felt so good about it. And if they could stop a toddler, they could make it really interesting in the SEC. But
instead,
they
let a dude
simply can't.
They let Trinidad Chambliss, the third string walk on, essentially throw for 353 against them.
21 of 29.
And they also let Austin Simmons, who had half of a foot,
throw a
combined,
touchdown.
Go for 1-for-1 and throw a touchdown pass in there.
Like, man, what are we doing? I was texting our buddy Ty from ESPN Arkansas, who we love talking to and having on from time to time, and he was there in Oxford. He was like, man, it's just so depressing.
Oh,
we finally start scoring, and we can't stop anybody.
He posted a picture on his Instagram story of some South Carolina fan just sitting down, surrender cobraing, just hands all over the head, and it was like life of an Arkansas fan. And it was like, yep,
yeah,
we've been there. Same thing with Florida. Man, DJ Lagway problem.
Brutal.
That's
brutal.
Five interceptions and just the inability to – he was in his head after the second one, and you could see there was hesitation throwing the football and –
He threw it 49 times in this game. Florida's defense is legit.
Yes.
LSU's offense is not. But the Tigers win, and they remain a top three team in college football.
Napier and Lagway both to Maryland or something next year and go pop off.
At least Napier wasn't one of the coaches that got fired this weekend. Pretty crazy stuff going on around college football. We're talking more about that, plus Auburn, AP poll, and who knows what else on the Monday edition of On the Line. Hour number two coming up.
The following is an Auburn Network production. You are on the line, live on ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com, and the Radio Alabama app. To be on the line, call 334-321-1390 or text 334-784-1067. Bringing you the insight and passion surrounding Auburn athletics, the SEC, and more. This is what Sports Talk Radio should be. Lock it in right here on Auburn Opelika's sports leader, ESPN 106.7. Now, live from Auburn, Alabama, with the guys who tell it like it is and hold nothing back. You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika Sports Leader. Happy Monday, everybody. Hope you're doing well as we get underway here in hour number two during On the Line on ESPN 106.7. It is the show that tells you like it is and holds nothing back. He is Christian Griffin. I'm Jacob Goins. We appreciate you being with us here on the Auburn Opelika Sports Leader, ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com, or that Radio Alabama app. If you missed any of hour number one, we gave some of our generic thoughts on Auburn and South Alabama from this weekend as the Tigers are now 3-0 to start the 2025 campaign after taking down South Alabama 31-15. So we talked about that. I also gave some thoughts a little bit deeper on the defensive side of the football for Auburn, some injury updates on that side of things, and talked about that. Plus, we did a quick recap of week three of college football. We're going to be able to do that a little bit more here as we talk about the AP poll. But I had a lot of fun in hour number one. Great text, great phone calls as well. So if you missed any of that, you can go back and catch it with the podcast version of the show. We post it for you every single day, wherever you get your podcast, or on our station website at ESPNAU.com.
Here in hour number two, we've talked about it, our new favorite segment on Mondays, and that's talking about the lovely AP Top 25 poll. And yeah, that's going to allow us to have a little bit more discussion on last week's games, previewing this week's games just a little bit. But man, just the thoughts on you want to just go ask everybody why. What were you thinking when this list came out to you and you had to mark 1 through 25. We're talking about that to start hour number two. Before we dive into some of our high school games, Auburn High and Lee Scott Academy, talking about the 2-0 weekend that the boys had this past Friday. Before we get to Jacob Hillman of the Auburn Sports Network breaking down Auburn, South Alabama, beginning to look ahead towards Auburn and Oklahoma, and maybe talking about some Auburn basketball news, as well as there's some new drip on social media for those that have not seen it. And it's pretty sweet. It's got a little mixed reviews, but I'm a fan of it. And I know you were talking about it of, man, if you were still playing basketball, those shoes would be in your cart yesterday.
I would love it. I would absolutely love it, man. Those KDs are so clean.
They are. They are. And how nice is it that Auburn can actually go and wear a bunch of different types of Nike shoes if they so choose now?
Kobe's and LeBron's and KD's and Jaws and Greek Freaks. I mean, you can wear them all.
You can wear so many different ones. But all of that coming up here in hour number two. We appreciate everybody for being here with us. He's Jacob Goins. I'm Christian Griffin. And we appreciate, again, everybody for being here with us. Whether you're just now tuning in with us or you've been along for the entire hour number one ride, man, we're having a good time on this essentially free-for-all Monday. That's kind of what it's turned into, where you're talking Auburn, you're talking the rest of college football, and now we get to dive into the wonderful AP Top 25.
Somebody sent a text in the text box just now, and it absolutely goes along with what we're about to discuss. 334-784-1067 is that number if you want to shoot us a message. This texter says, if Mississippi State was called Notre Dame, they'd be a top 10 team.
Exactly.
And I think they're right.
They
would be a top 20 team, no doubt about it. Why is Mississippi State not ranked? If they had, Texas, Notre Dame, Ohio State, if they had a better logo, a bigger logo, a more recognizable logo, and better street cred, you're absolutely right. Mississippi State would be ranked, and they should be.
Well, we talked about it last week of South Florida having the best resume in college football. You go on the road and beat top 25 Notre Dame. You then go on the road in the swamp, I don't care what Florida looks like, and you beat Florida in Gainesville. Even through week three, that's arguably still the best resume in college football. Yes, you then lose to the number four team in the country, but before that, you were the 18th ranked team after not being ranked. Where the heck is South Florida now? You lose to the number four team in the country, and you're now 2-1 still with the best resume in college football, and you're nowhere to be seen in the top 25. This is the perfect example. Notre Dame is another record, or another example. Why is Notre Dame ranked?
They're 0-2.
They're 0-2.
With a bye week in there. They had a bye week, and they still lost.
Why is Texas a top 10 team?
I'm with you on that.
I refuse to believe it. Why is LSU the third ranked team in the country? Why is Miami Florida not in front of them?
I think LSU deserves it. I know their win against Clemson doesn't look as good now as it did. But that's still a talented Clemson team who's got a really good defense, and you went to their house at night to open up the season and got a win. I know it hasn't been pretty for LSU, but wins are wins.
It is.
I think they're a top five team.
I agree that they're fourth or fifth, but I don't think they're third. I think Miami or Georgia, based off of how everything goes, and especially if Miami now can hoist a top 25 win over South Florida, I feel like they should be able to jump in there.
Yeah,
after beating, again, a Florida team that just lost to South Florida.
I mean, with that, though, I'd say Penn State's not the second best team in college football.
I wouldn't disagree with that either. But, yeah. Again, that's,
Oregon, yeah.
That's what we see right now, why Florida State, with a bye week, moved up three spots.
Yeah, so listen to this. Yeah, I saw somebody put this out the other day. Florida State, hold on. Let's read through the AP poll really quick, just in case somebody hasn't seen it for whatever reason, okay?
If you haven't, just don't even look at it.
Just don't look. You're going to get as mad as we are. Ohio State 1, Penn State 2, LSU 3, Miami 4, Georgia 5. Oregon 6, Florida State 7, Texas 8, Illinois 9, Texas A&M at 10. Oklahoma's 11th, Iowa State is 12, Ole Miss is 13, Alabama 14, Tennessee 15. Utah 16, they're finally getting some love. Texas Tech at 17, Georgia Tech 18 after their win over Clemson. Indiana 19, Vanderbilt at 20. Michigan 21, Auburn moves up two spots to 22. Missouri's 23, Notre Dame is 24, and Southern Cal is finally getting respect as well. They are at 25. Here are some things that happened in this newest AP poll. You mentioned it. Florida State did not play this past weekend. And somehow they jumped over Illinois, who beat their opponent 38-0. Alabama jumps five spots after they beat Wisconsin this weekend. Which, again, Alabama looked good. And they kicked Wisconsin up and down the field for four quarters. They did. They did. They were much more talented than that Wisconsin team. Wisconsin's defensive front is solid. Other than that, they ain't got it. And how about this? Back-to-back years, both matchups between Alabama and Wisconsin, the Badgers had to play their backup quarterback. Think about that. Not that Wisconsin was going to win even with their starter, probably, because talent won this game for Alabama, but that's unfortunate. Anyway, Alabama jumps five spots for beating Wisconsin at home. Woohoo. A team that I think is going to lose their head coach this year because Luke Fickell just ain't got it. Okay? Oregon goes on the road in conference play, wins by 20, and they drop two spots. Georgia wins at Tennessee, but doesn't jump LSU, which is what you're talking about. There's so many inconsistencies here, and you've said it best, Christian. The AP poll voters, which for some reason they've agreed to allow their votes to be posted online, which I think is good. I can't believe they agreed to it. You've said it best. They make up for what they didn't do the week before.
Exactly.
They realize, oh, maybe we did screw up. Maybe we did get that wrong.
Or it was the, I wanted to do this, but I still didn't do it yet because I wasn't sure. Now I'm sure.
Well, good thing is it doesn't really matter that much. I mean, it's just the AP poll. It doesn't really matter. There's just so many things that, yeah, I just don't agree. Notre Dame, I'll go through and give mine, and then I'll let you do yours. Sure. Notre Dame is not a top 25 team. I think Auburn's better than 22nd in the country. Vanderbilt absolutely deserves to be in the top 25. I think 20 is perfect for them. They've earned that, I think. Indiana, fine. Georgia Tech, fine. Texas Tech, I'm not there yet. Utah deserves the respect. I think 16's a little high. Tennessee, I don't think they should have been punished for this weekend. I really don't. I don't think they should be punished.
Which they weren't.
They weren't. I'm just saying in general, the teams that are ahead of them is a little ridiculous. Alabama, again, moving up five spots. That's bad. Iowa State, fine. Oklahoma, you can make an argument they could be higher. They're 11th. I think they could be higher. Texas A&M, sure. Illinois, sure. Texas, no. You're not the 8th best team in college football. Florida State,
you know
no.
Why they are, though?
Because their logo.
Exactly.
Florida State, you're not a top 10. You're not a top 10 team yet. I'm sorry, you're not.
Especially not after a bye week.
After you literally did nothing. Oregon should be higher. They're 6, they should be top 3. They should be top 3. Georgia, Top five, I'm cool. Miami, yeah, they've earned it. Top five, I'm cool. But there's a lot of inconsistencies here that I just simply don't agree with.
Yeah. My one through five, I kind of given my thoughts. I think Ohio State is clear at number one. As of right now, I would be perfectly fine if you flipped Oregon and Penn State, because you feel the AP poll voter. The AP poll voters are my new favorite slogan, and that's their box score viewers, because
they are.
Oh, Penn State, look at what they just did to this team. Oh, yeah, well, it was 19-0 going into the fourth quarter, and because James Franklin wants to put up two touchdowns with under 2 minutes to play to make it look like they did anything, and I understand, yes, their defense is very, very good, and their offense does enough to allow them to win football games, but when you go through and you look at the teams that they've played and how, well, it was 13-0 Villanova, I believe, at halftime. Penn State was in front of Villanova. And now all of a sudden, you go and look at the box score, and it's, oh, well, they demolished Villanova like they were supposed to. They are good. They're number two. I'd be fine if you flipped Oregon and Penn State. I think Miami and arguably Georgia, I know that the win is, it looks good for LSU, the Clemson win does, but even if you just kept Miami at fourth and you put Georgia at third after a win on the road in Knoxville, in Tennessee, I'm fine with you moving them up to three. But I think one through six, so you could say, is relatively consistent. I don't know how Oklahoma, just from what they've shown, is not a top 10 team.
And
I understand that there's a lot that comes with that this weekend. But if you flipped Texas and Oklahoma, I feel like there would be less complaints, but the fact that Texas struggled mightily and moves to 2-1, they're still a top 10 team. I think Illinois is kind of fine where they're at. Luke Altmyer is a heck of a quarterback. The win at Duke, I think, is a very, very solid win. A&M at 10, sure, that's fine.
Illinois, by the way, goes on the road to Indiana this weekend in Bloomington for a top 20 matchup. So you're going to learn a lot about both of those teams this weekend.
Is that the big noon kickoff?
No, that's a night game in Bloomington.
Ooh, what is the big noon kickoff this weekend?
I don't know, but I do know that College Game Day is going to...
College Game Day is going to
Florida and Miami.
Yep.
I'm sorry, what?
Yep.
What?
Florida.
On paper, preseason, yeah. Absolutely, that game could be awesome. But what in the world did you see this past weekend that said, let's go highlight the Gators, baby. They deserve to be on national television. Hell no.
You want to hear the games that are better than Florida and Miami this weekend? Texas Tech and Utah, 17 versus number 16.
Absolutely.
Go to Rice-Eccles Stadium. Man,
that place would be sweet.
That place would be awesome. Legit. Even if you chose SMU and TCU. That would be a better game. I know it's 11 a.m., but still, that one would be a little bit better. Oklahoma and Auburn, or Auburn-Oklahoma, is right in there. Michigan-Nebraska is right in there as well. Scrolling down, looking at more of them, South Carolina-Missouri, maybe not so much. Illinois-Indiana, the one that you just mentioned, is a pretty good game if you chose to do that. There's four just scrolling through really fast that would be better than going to Miami, where they're going to just have fun at College Game Day, I guess.
Somebody sent us a text in the text box. Same person that said the thing about Mississippi State earlier. It says, Auburn's claim for mythical, in quotations, mythical national championships growing stronger with every week's AP poll.
Yeah.
And I agree.
If Auburn could just go 0-0 and just have 12 bye weeks, they'd work their way into the top 10, because that's all you have to do.
Here's how bad the AP poll is at times. I'm looking through some of these voters. Again, it's public. You can go and look at the however many voters that there are. And what's crazy is they have to put their school affiliation, which is wild to me. Somebody, and I always knew that we were big fans of Sam McCowan, I hope I pronounced that, a Nebraska Omaha World Herald person. They voted Auburn as the 10th best team in the country.
Sure.
Somebody has Auburn as the 10th ranked team in the country. Somebody has Notre Dame as the 10th ranked team in the country. Somebody has Vanderbilt as the 10th ranked team in the country. This person has BYU as the 10th ranked team in the country.
I think BYU should be. They're as of right now, they're the first team out. I think BYU should be in the top 25.
This person has Missouri as the 10th ranked team in the country.
What have they shown you that it shouldn't be?
Ole Miss as the 10th ranked team in the country for this person. How about South Carolina? Yes, that's real. Somebody has South Carolina as their 10th best team in the country. Tell me how stupid that is. Like,
what is that? Can you see what is their affiliation?
Oh, yeah. It's the Oregon affiliate.
Oh.
Yeah. I won't call him out by name. You can go find it if you want to. But that just goes to show, like, what? How, man? I don't understand it. A couple of people have Mississippi State in their top 25. Not many. Not many people do at all.
Because it's poor old Mississippi State.
Nobody cares about Mississippi State. Nobody wants to talk about them. Nobody wants to talk. Half these AP poll voters, I would be willing to bet, Christian Griffin, half of these AP poll voters, if you ask them and put them on a lie detector test in their chest, in their head, in their side, wherever you hook that thing up to, and I ask them one question, who's the head coach of Mississippi State football? Do you think they could answer that?
No.
Do you think that somebody who covers Oregon and Oregon State could tell me who the head coach of the Mississippi State Bulldogs is? Ain't no way. Ain't no way. And it's no coincidence that, oh my God, timeout. Timeout. They have Mississippi State, that person, the 15th ranked team in the country. Good for them. They probably still couldn't tell you who it is. But that's what our point is here, folks. The system is so old school, man.
Gross.
It's so retro. It's I called it dinosaur last week. There's a better word for that. I can't think of what it is.
Feels like when you look at the AP poll, you're going over to your great-great-grandma's house and you're looking at it and you're like, Grandma, what's the rest of this thing attached to the back of the TV?
It's like reading it in the newspaper, man. Like, it's just because that's how it's always been done doesn't mean it's the correct way to continue to do it, is all we're saying. And the discrepancies here, I highly recommend it. It's really entertaining. Just go on X and type in AP poll and start scrolling. You'll see it. You can just start looking at all these people and what they voted and how they voted. It's wild, man. I mean, I continue to find fascinating votes in here.
I think they've gotten to the point, they being AP News, of they realize how bad it is, but it's like, hey, it's given us the media attention that we need. It's given the clicks. It's given the quote tweets and everything. So let's just keep on doing it. We need to have four teams in there that are completely randomized just so that way the fan bases lose their mind, because right now they still know they have everybody there on a chokehold on a Sunday evening now for some reason when the AP poll gets released of waiting for everybody or somebody to lose their minds. Which maybe that's me. Maybe that's the reason that they're still as popular as they are, because as you know, I'm a big fan of early season top 25 rankings.
Going back to Mississippi State for a second, because this is such a fascinating conversation to me.
I was gonna say, you don't know what I just said. You've just been scrolling.
They play Northern Illinois this week, so they should be 4-0.
You and I, baby.
Then they host Tennessee. I'm just saying. Mississippi State's schedule is brutal. They play Tennessee, at Texas A&M, at Florida, home for Texas, at Arkansas, home for Georgia, at Missouri, home for Ole Miss. That's brutal.
Wasn't Mississippi State your lock on the house to go under?
I don't know, were they?
I don't remember. You wrote it down somewhere.
Yeah, I think I threw that piece of paper away.
It's crazy. You did that 2 weeks ago with Dilly Dilly after that game. I think that was when you threw that away.
Were they? No, they weren't my lock
I don't
to go
know.
Under.
I, for some reason.
No. Surely
we
not.
We need to go back and find it.
That's been a while. When did we do that? July?
That was middle of the summer. That was before we went to Atlanta.
Oh, boy.
Or either that or it was the week after we got back.
Surely not. Oh, man. Actually, they may have been. They may have been. The more I think about it, the more that sounds like me. Yeah. If that's the case, I'll eat it. That's fine. Good for you. Jeff Lebby, I can name their head coach. Maybe I should be an AP poll voter. Clearly, I may or may not know what the heck I'm talking about. But
I think that's the qualification, is that you may or may not.
Apparently, that's how half these people vote. All right, 334-321-1390. We got to get to a break. We'll come back. We will keep talking college football. Maybe talk a little high school as well before we get to our bottom of the hour break at 330. Jacob Hillman of the Auburn Sports Network is going to join us as well. We continue with the Monday edition of On the Line after this.
You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin. If you want to be on the line, call 334-321-1390 or text 334-784-1067.
All right, we got a couple of minutes before we get to our bottom of the hour break, where Jacob Hillman of the Auburn Sports Network will join us. Let's get to the phone lines one more time. Before we do, 334-321-1390. And Billy, we appreciate you holding on through the break. You're on the line, my friend.
Hey, guys. Just real quick, a couple of points. My first is I have a two-way tie for 10th in my poll. I've got UCLA and Virginia Tech tied at number 10.
That sounds about right. I mean, I think they're going to turn the corner this week, Billy. I really do. New coaches, new day, new week for those two programs, right?
Hey, you saw who Virginia Tech's interim coach is, didn't you?
I don't think I actually did.
Philip Montgomery.
Is it really? Wow.
It
How about that?
Yeah. Huh. All right, so on a serious note about Auburn. So I've got a question real quick. The Jumbotrons, while they are super great and all this, do you think that they actually take away from Auburn's home field advantage? And the reason I say that is because in between plays, you know, they get so loud that, you know, you can't hear the crowd over it. And then by the time the play starts, you know, the crowd's already died down because they're watching the Jumbotron.
It's a good point. I guess I haven't thought about it that much, and I'm curious on what that will be like with an SEC opponent comes to town, which will be what Georgia will be the first game. So I get what you're saying. I still think, though, it's super intimidating for an opponent to come in and play with two big Jumbotrons with the speakers going crazy and then the crowd on top of that. And even the in quarter or between the quarter antics too, like the laser light show and all that mess. I mean, I think it's still a really tough place to play, but I get what you're coming from. I do.
Now, I get that, but I do know that the administration and I know this for a fact, there has been some controversy just because the people running the video board and the band have had a because the band's not been able to play like they used to play.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Yeah, it takes away a little bit of the...
I know that for a fact.
Yeah, it takes away a little bit of like the raw energy, right? Because it's not the band, the one that's playing the song on third down to get everybody hyped up. It's some sort of techno vibe or whatever. And backing you up on that, Billy, I know on the defensive side of the football, it happens a lot with like offenses when you go on the road, but I know a bunch of teams at home have to use a lot more nonverbal communication just because the crowd's going crazy and the speakers are going crazy when the other team is on offense. And that could honestly go with what you were talking about of missed assignments or miscommunication on the defensive side of the field.
And that's true. And thing that brought it up is, I'm not counting South Alabama and Ball State, but for even lower SEC teams besides Georgia, Alabama, LSU, things like that, is the comments, and I believe it was Steve Spurrier that made, or somebody said that Jordan Hare was not what it once was. I don't remember what coach it was that said that.
Mm-hmm.
That said their home field was not, you know, as intimidating as it was. Now, I know the product on the field has a lot to do with that also. So.
Yes, it does, for sure.
But anyway, yeah, I just was going to bring that up.
Yeah, I think it's a good point, Billy. We appreciate the call, my man. Thanks for listening and being a part of the show. Yeah, I think absolutely he's right about that, to where the scoreboards could absolutely have a negative impact maybe. But I think you bring up a good point, too, about Auburn's defense having to – yeah, use silent communication and things. And even though a linebacker wears the green dot on the back of their helmet, like, you still have to overcome all the noise and distractions too.
Yeah, I mean, again, I feel like it has pros and cons, obviously, right? I mean, it takes away, like what I was saying, a little bit of authenticity of the stereotypical college football. And this is everywhere. This is not just Auburn.
Sure.
This is every team that uses all sorts of these sounds prior to snaps, but... yeah, I know that the band would love to be a factor of it, a factor in it as well.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Okay, we got to take our bottom of the hour break. We will do that. We will get Jacob Hillman of the Auburn Sports Network on the phone, and then we'll talk to him, his thoughts on Auburn South Alabama, updates around Auburn Athletics, Tiger Talk coming up tonight as well. We'll do that right after this here on ESPN 106.7.
We're halfway through hour number two. You've got 30 more minutes of On the Line on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader.
We've got 30 more minutes here on the Monday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. I'm Jacob Goins. Across from me is Christian Griffin, and we get to the phone lines for our usual Monday 3:30 guest. He's with the Auburn Sports Network. He helps things run smoothly over on that side of town. Mr. Jacob Hillman is with us on the phone lines now. Good afternoon, rather. Could be good evening if you wanted it to, but good afternoon to you, sir. Tigers are 3-0, and the vibes seem to be pretty high here on the Plains.
Yeah, you're right. We're getting to the evening time when Tiger Talk will roll around at Baumhauer's Victory Grill on the Wings 94.3 FM. But it was a great homecoming at Jordan-Hare Stadium and on the Plains this weekend. So excited to get back on the road and into SEC action this upcoming week.
Well, there's been obviously a lot of talk over the last several days about what Auburn did or didn't do against South Alabama, but what they did do was win the game. 31-15, final score. Auburn beat South Alabama on homecoming. A lot of things going on outside the game itself. And so your takeaways, Jacob, on what you saw and liked and did not like for Auburn against South Alabama.
Yeah, I really liked the first half of play, especially from the Auburn offense and even the Auburn defense as well. And it really was a game where you felt really good going into halftime, and the second half rolls around, and it felt like, I don't know if Coach Freeze said this, that he got a little conservative in the second half, and really you look at the drive chart, and it's odd of how there's really only two real drives in that second half for Auburn, because obviously the last drive of the game, you're just running out the clock and trying to get into the locker room and go home with the win. But Auburn obviously was able to just control that game, was never threatened. And I thought the biggest thing was some of those long touchdown drives that Auburn had. One was a touchdown drive, one was a field goal drive. They're both over 10 plays towards the end of the first half, and then to start the third quarter. Being able to kind of have those back to back, that's what you want to see. You want to see Auburn be able to sustain drives, and whether it's with the running game, with the passing game, whatever it is, and the Tigers were able to do that. And I'm impressed by what they were able to do with some of the injuries that they sustained, and some of them not as severe as you might have thought. And it was just a little bit of a precautionary deal, but I still think Auburn kind of settled in against the South Alabama team that had a heck of a comeback attempt against Tulane the week prior. Tried to show that a little bit on Saturday, but ultimately Auburn held them off, and it was a solid win against an in-state opponent.
Again, you avoided that trap game that you feel like many people talked about all week, and you saw other teams kind of struggle with that in week two and week three, but a 16-point win for Auburn inside Jordan-Hare. You mentioned control, and that's controlling the game, also controlling the clock. You hear a little bit of talk around the defensive side of the football on – oh man, South Alabama was really able to move the ball, and you can't play with fire too many times or you're going to get burned. But we talked about it to start the show, Hillman, of, man, it felt like Durkin almost allowed the South Alabama offense to eat as much clock, and you almost saw Auburn use on their defense what you saw Baylor use against Auburn of allowing the 4 and 5 yard plays but not allowing those chunk plays. And then Auburn got it into South Alabama got into the red zone, and that was when you see that Auburn defense really turn it on, force field goals, and even get a turnover as well.
Well, and I look at that last drive on the offense for South Alabama, and the clock's just ticking. They're down 16 points, and I'm thinking they really are not concerned with the clock at this point. And I think that is to your point because of the game plan Auburn had set in place, especially for that second half on the defensive side of the football. That's something that we haven't really talked about a ton this year, but it's the turnover battle where Auburn is really starting to win that and do its thing, forcing a fumble late in that game, as well as that interception by Keyron Crawford. But most importantly, the offense is protecting the football as Jackson Arnold has protected it all season long. And I just think that that's the key. We talked about it all offseason long and all last year. And this year, it's so far so good. Auburn's fumbled it a few times, but it has recovered it all but once. So I just think that's kind of your key in a ball game like that, is if you protect the football and you've got a decent lead, then you're gonna set yourself up for success, and that's the key in SEC play, obviously, because the game is elevated a ton these next 3 weeks. You're facing three top 11 opponents in a row, and I just think that you're gonna see a little bit of a different. I don't know, maybe not necessarily a different game plan, but it's going to look different than it has the last 3 weeks for this Auburn offense specifically in these next three games.
We're talking to Jacob Hillman of the Auburn Sports Network here on ESPN 106.7. When you look at this Oklahoma team that Auburn now turns its attention to, focuses on as SEC play begins, what is it about Oklahoma, whether it's offensively, defensively, just the dudes that they have on that team, Hillman, what is it about them that stands out to you that Auburn's got to be ready for this week?
Yeah, the obvious answer is John Mateer and his passing ability and what he has done so far this year. And I think there are many that are looking at it as well. The Heisman conversation is going to start for him at some point. And it's very possible that he's just had, a great 3 weeks where that's part of it. He is throwing the rock around. I'm interested to see how Oklahoma tries to run the ball against Auburn, because I think that to be successful against the Auburn defense, you cannot be one-dimensional. I think we saw that in specifically that Baylor game where, the run game wasn't there. Ball State rushed for negative yardage on the ground. And if you're one-dimensional, Auburn is going to be able to find success against you, because it just doesn't really work. And while I think tackling and those issues have been talked about at this point with the secondary, I don't think it's an issue that is necessarily critical, where I think that it's going to continue. I think it was against a dynamic offense in Baylor with a great quarterback that put his receivers and his playmakers in great positions. And then the South Alabama, because it was much better against Ball State, obviously. We saw it flash for sure with the defensive side of the football versus the South Alabama game, where it wasn't quite as clean as it was the week before. So I think that the key is how does Auburn handle Oklahoma's running game? Because I think the Sooners are definitely going to try to run the ball, and then limiting job back here, making sure he doesn't throw for 400 plus yards or anything crazy like that. We saw Sawyer Robertson have success in the past game, but as long as the offense as a whole isn't clicking and able to run the ball, then I think the defense can give and take what it wants to.
Plenty of time to dive into Auburn and Oklahoma. But, well, Jacob, while we have you just for a few moments, you got to look outside of Jordan-Hare Stadium and look at all the other events going on, man. You type in PGA Tour, or you type in the name Jackson Koivin, and you saw the man have a pretty good weekend, shooting 16 under par, 1 under on Sunday, was tied for 4th in the Pro Core Championship. Talk to us about what you've seen and how cool it is to still be able to see, when you type in his name, currently attending Auburn University.
Yeah, I'll tell you what. What a special few months for Jackson Koivin this summer, as he has been he played a major in the U.S. Open. He's finished in the top 11 four consecutive PGA Tour starts. He helped the United States win the Walker Cup. I mean, quite frankly, if I were Keegan Bradley, I might have been thinking about having him on the Ryder Cup team coming up here in a couple months with how great he's been playing. But, I think it's really interesting just watching his game develop on the PGA Tour specifically. I forget which tournament it was, but it was one of these last four where he was in contention going into the weekend, but just was struggling with his irons. And there was one hole on the final, or maybe on Saturday or Sunday in that tournament, where he hit in the water, made a double bogey, and he was kind of out of it. But he battled back and got that top 11 finish. But this week, going into Sunday, he led the field in strokes gained approach. And really on Sunday, where he struggled, he couldn't find a fairway that front nine. He hit one fairway on the front nine, and his iron saved him. So we know what his putting's about. He is the best putter in the world in the amateur ranks, and he's probably top 25 putter in the world, even if you count the professionals. So I just think that his game is as good as it gets. He is the top 50 player in the world right now, even if you combine amateur and professional rankings. And it's just really special to get to watch him as an amateur, and whenever he comes back to Auburn and plays this upcoming season, because this Auburn men's golf team is loaded with the returns of Josiah Gilbert, Billy Davis, and then Logan Riley. He was a great player in the U.S. Amateur earlier this summer as well. I think he finished third in the stroke play portion before falling in match play. So there's a lot to look forward to for this Auburn men's golf program, and Jackson Koivin's obviously at the top of the list and garnering a ton of hype with his finishes on the PGA Tour this summer.
And looking inside Neville Arena, Auburn basketball with a couple new jerseys. Auburn displaying their Nike uniforms here this afternoon. A bunch of pictures and videos all over social media. But the stripes now on the collar and around the sleeves as well, and the stripes going down the side. Do you have a favorite of the three since they released the orange, the white, and the blue? Do you have a favorite of the three?
I don't know yet, but here's what my biggest key here is. I want to see the orange jerseys again. We didn't see them last year on the men's side, so I'd like to see the orange jerseys make another appearance, and there is proof that they exist with the release today from the social media team. So I want to see those orange jerseys in action this year, and I don't know when, I don't care when. I just want to see them in action. It's just been too long, and it's time we see them once again.
We're talking with Jacob Hillman of the Auburn Sports Network. Again, he's with us every Monday at 3:30 here on ESPN 106.7. What else is going on around Auburn Athletics that the people need to know about before we let you plug everything for the Auburn Sports Network?
Yeah, it was a big weekend for Auburn at home with the volleyball team getting a sweep of Florida State inside Neville Arena on Friday night. They returned the trip. It was an interesting setup here. It was kind of a home and away situation where yesterday Tigers went down to Tallahassee, won the first set, but unfortunately lost the next three. But Friday was a big match for the Tigers in front of an electric environment at Neville Arena. And Kate Mansfield had a great game, a career-high 10 blocks in that match. And this team is really starting to find its rhythm. Not the best performance in sets 2 through 4 yesterday, but still a lot to build off of as it gets set for one more non-conference set this weekend. Again, in the state of Alabama, it is the Alabama Showdown in Birmingham, where it will face UAB, it will face Samford, and it will face South Alabama. So that's Thursday through Saturday in Birmingham. And again, remember, all Auburn volleyball matches at Neville Arena, free to attend. So once SEC play gets ramped up, make sure you go out and see them. And then Auburn soccer had a draw in its first SEC match against Ole Miss. And this was a really weird game where Auburn outshot Ole Miss 28-4. Just couldn't find the back of the net more than that one time from Darius Ivey. So Tigers will be at home on Thursday against Texas A&M. That match is set for 6:30 Central at the Auburn Soccer Complex, also free to attend. So make sure you head over to the Auburn Soccer Complex on Thursday as Tigers look for their first SEC win of the James Armstrong era. And then cross country had its first regular season race of the year with a fourth place by the men and seventh place finish by the women at the Southern Showcase in Huntsville. So lots of action getting underway. Tennis is getting underway for the fall as well as men's and women's golf. So tons of action underway now for Auburn Athletics, and you can kind of follow it all at auburntigers.com as well as the Auburn Tigers app.
And then, of course, you guys back to action tonight with Tiger Talk, going to be happening from 6 to 7 p.m. Tell the folks who will be making an appearance for Tiger Talk, and then also plug the broadcast this weekend as you guys are back out on the road in Norman, Oklahoma.
That's right. Tonight, Tiger Talk at 6 Central until 7 Central on Wings 94.3 FM. Out live at Baumhauer's Victory Grill. So join us for dinner and get settled in for Monday Night Football as head coach Hugh Freeze will recap the homecoming performance and look ahead to the game in Norman, Oklahoma. And then Kurt Sasser from the Alumni Association will join us to talk about the big tailgate that will be taking place in Norman this weekend. A great opportunity if you're headed out to that game to join a bunch of the Auburn family before that game. And that broadcast on Saturday will begin at 11:30 a.m. Central on Wings 94.3 FM with kickoff set for 2:30 Central, I think, with the ABC TV designation. It's going to be technically about 2:45, 2:47 in there, so a few extra minutes of pregame, but it's going to be an exciting time as we get SEC action underway in Norman, Oklahoma against the Sooners. Also, Talking Tigers podcast today, talking NIL with Brett Whiteside and Cannon Gaines with Andy Burcham on the War Eagle Podcast Network. So obviously a very important time for NIL in this day and age, and they talk all about it on the Talking Tigers podcast.
Jacob Hillman of the Auburn Sports Network, my friend. We always appreciate your time. We look forward to this every single Monday. And, look, safe travels to you and everyone going out to Norman this weekend. And we're looking forward to hearing Tiger Talk tonight and then the football broadcast on Saturday.
Yeah, hope to bring home a 1-0 record in SEC play when we talk next Monday. But until then, War Eagle.
Thanks so much. Jacob Hillman of the Auburn Sports Network. Again, he's with us every Monday, 3:30, right here on ESPN 106.7. Longtime guest right there, Jacob Hillman, joining us on the phone lines. We'll take our final break, come back, and wrap it all up here on the Monday edition of On the Line.
You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin, online at ESPNAU.com and on the Radio Alabama app.
Winding down here on the Monday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7, thanks to Jacob Hillman of the Auburn Sports Network. I say he's a longtime guest because he was a guest on this show even before I was on this show. So Mondays at 3:30 have been just concreted into that man's schedule. So, look, we appreciate him and always be willing to hop on. I mean, even holidays and stuff, most of the time he's willing to hop on. I mean, there's been a couple of times where he's like on the golf course where he's told us to, you know, kick rocks and not talk to him and not call him because he's in the middle of his birdie round. But for the most part, no, we appreciate him, and he's been a part of a great show that we've had today. Talked a lot of Auburn football, of course, beating South Alabama. Also talked a lot of the results from week 3 of college football. We ripped the AP poll to shreds, as we love to do, and a whole lot more. Lots of phone calls, lots of texts and things, and so if you missed any of today's show, go check it out on our station website in the podcast center, ESPNAU.com. And I was sent an article that one of our callers was talking about, the Spurrier stuff with him ripping Auburn apart about Auburn's home field advantage not being all that. I missed this. This was written a couple of days ago from Yahoo. One of the quotes in the article says, from Spurrier, Cal beat Auburn. 13-point favorites at home. Auburn used to be a tough place to play, is what Steve Spurrier said. And look, to the caller's points, and he was texting in here as well, bad coaching and bad product got us here, not lights and video boards.
Yeah.
And that's exactly right. I mean, Auburn, I've said it. I had the quote last year, and it hurts. But until you earn this respect back, Jordan Hare's been just another stadium in the last 5 to 7 years. And it has nothing to do with the fans. It has nothing to do, like they said, the atmosphere is not the issue. It's been the product on the field. You put on a good product, you get a good atmosphere. Look at what Tennessee was this weekend. I had several people that I know that were there, and even more on social media, that said that was the loudest environment they've ever been a part of in a college football game, was Neyland Stadium this weekend. You put a good product on the field, you get a good result. You build it, they will come.
And even more so on the Auburn side, because they've stuck through those years of pain and,
like,
and
Tennessee,
and misery, much like Tennessee has. And so, yeah, I think there's a lot more that goes into that than just simply the...
But why is Spurrier out here talking? I mean, what does Spurrier have to gain
the same thing
from talking about Auburn?
It's the same thing about after the Texas A&M Notre Dame game. And they were interviewing Mike Elko, and I said, like, it was A&M's first road win against, like, an AP top whatever team, and it was, like, 2013 Auburn. It was like, whoa, get our name out of here. I don't know what you're doing. Speaking of Auburn and, I guess, Texas A&M and the rest of the season, I know that the little ESPN matchup predictor, you know, when you go click on the team and it has the little pie chart looking thing of the percentages of each team to win. Auburn is now only favored in 2 games, Kentucky and Mercer.
Wow.
Auburn's obviously not a favorite on the road at Oklahoma or A&M. Georgia is 63%. Missouri at on the road is 50.3, which again is right around middle of the pack. Arkansas is 55%. Kentucky, you're projected to win. Mercer, Vanderbilt has a 56% chance to beat Auburn.
The way they're playing, yeah. Auburn's schedule's about to ramp up, and we'll continue to talk about it as the week goes on. We're back tomorrow, 2 to 4, right here on ESPN 106.7. Until then, he's Christian Griffin. I'm Jacob Goins. Stay safe. We'll talk to you later.